All right. Well, it's great to be with you again this morning and to take an opportunity to share God's Word. As we always do, we thank you for your prayers for us as we travel and are busy with many things. Some of you have asked about our move, and we appreciate that. We have not moved yet, but we are planning on moving. But with all the rain we've had in Tennessee this spring, the move has been delayed because they're building the apartments. And so we're looking now, we'll be on the road when they actually have move-in date, so that's very hard to move when you're not there. We'll be in California at that time, so we're looking now at August for a move-in date, but we again appreciate your prayers. We are trying to sell the home probably in the middle of next month, and then we'll be basically homeless, as we might say, for a short time. For a couple of months, we'll be on the road in various places out west and so on. So appreciate your prayers for us with that. With that being said, I know our time is brief, and if you have any other questions about the move or what the ministry and what's going on, feel free to just chat with us during the breaks or during the lunch or whatever. That'd be fine. I hear there's a marvelous lunch coming, so I'm looking forward to that. And we appreciate the hospitality that we've been shown in our time here. Basically, as far as what I'll cover here during this time, Brother Neil sent me a little note asking if I might look at Acts chapter 27. I believe that we looked at Acts last time I was here as well during the Sunday school hour, and so he asked if I might do that. I did not get a chance to listen to the other brothers who preceded me. I didn't have time, but I did look at chapter 27 a bit and made a few notes that I hope will be a help to you as you look at the chapter. Now, it's got 44 verses. And I forgot how many hours we have here this morning. And so we won't be able to get through all 44 verses, but I'm going to do a little bit of an overview of it, and then perhaps the other brethren who follow me will be able to take a more detailed look at some of the verses. But let's go to chapter 27 of the book of Acts then, and read starting in verse 1. But when it had been determined that we should sail to Italy, they delivered up Paul and certain other prisoners to a centurion by name Julius of Augustus's company, and going on board a ship of Adramyttium, about to navigate by the places along Asia, we set sail, Aristarchus and the Macedonian of Thessalonica being with us. And the next day we arrived at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and suffered him to go to his friends and refresh himself. And setting sail thence, so that we sailed in the lee of Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And having sailed over the waters of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra and Lycia, and there the centurion, having found the ship of Alexandria, sailing to Italy, he made us go on board her. And sailing slowly for many days, and having with difficulty got abreast of Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under the lee of Crete, abreast of Salome. And we came to a certain, and coasting with difficulty, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, near to which was the city of Lycia. And much time having now been spent, and navigation being already dangerous, because the fast also is already passed, Paul counseled them, saying, "Men, I perceive that the navigation will be disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." But the centurion believed rather the helmsman and the ship owner than what was said by Paul. Now we'll stop there and see how far we get in our overview of the chapter. If we were just to read this on our own, just read this little section, we might say, "Well, that's all very nice. What's next?" You see, there may not seem an awful lot for us to learn there. How do we use such things, especially all the detail that Paul gives about this journey? And you know what happens, and I won't be able to read the whole thing this morning, but you know what happens is they end up not doing so well, right? They hit a storm, and may suggest it was a hurricane of some kind, or whatever it may have been, and you know what happens, of course. They end up being shipwrecked eventually at Malta, and they end up on the island there, which you'll get into chapter 28. But you see, there's 44 verses of detail about Paul's trip as he starts to go off to Rome. And of course, we know why he's going to Rome, because he has asked to have his case heard before Caesar, right? In this case, I believe the time would be Nero, around 60 AD. And so he's asked for that. And so Festus has said, "Very well, you're going." And so that's what we see happening here. But if we're going to understand all about why the Lord brings out these issues of the storm, and the places, all the details that are written about what places and how they went and what side and the winds and so on, it becomes very important to see that God wanted all those details there for some reason. And it becomes evident that the writer, in this case Luke, has done a marvelous job in giving us a lot of detail, hasn't he? He's very good that way, and of course it seems like Luke was with him, it seems, because he uses the idea, he says there several times, we. It seems like, although he's not mentioned as being on the ship, it seems like perhaps Luke was on the ship, which is interesting to think about. And so it seems like he takes a record of all this that's going on, or perhaps remembers it all, we don't know, but later on records it perhaps. But certainly we get this record of all that happened following the issue of Paul going to Jerusalem. And that's where this whole section, by the way, starts, right? In chapter 19, doesn't it? That basically, up until chapter 19, around verse 20, Paul has been, you've seen all about, of course, what's happening with Peter and the early church and so on. And then, of course, in chapter 9, Paul comes to the fore. That's all good to understand in relation to what's happening here. And then from chapter 9 onwards, about chapter 19, I said middle of chapter 19, then we see, again, the gospel going forth. But Paul takes a greater role as we go further along. Especially in the last three or four chapters before chapter 19, he's really out there preaching the gospel. He's at Ephesus for about 27 months, it seems, and he does. It's been very successful, going very well. And so we have this sense that that Luke tells all about Paul and what he's been able to do. And then we come to verse 21 of chapter 19, and things change. And we see a complete change of direction. That now Paul knows he's going to go to Jerusalem. He wants to go to Jerusalem. And he's learning, of course, along his travels to Jerusalem, that, oh, by the way, bonds await thee, right? And so he realizes that even though he's been told that, he's willing to go. And that's because perhaps God has him to go. And so you see, starting in chapter 19 then, he's going to begin to defend the gospel. That up to this point, he's been preaching it. And it's had great success. But now there's more and more opposition to the gospel. And more raising up issues and so on, and riots and so on, against the gospel and against the speakers thereof, or the preachers thereof. And so now it changes. God has Paul now, rather than preaching the gospel, although it still comes out, he's now going to defend the gospel. Isn't that important for us today as well? That we see the issue that, there, at times it seems very easy to preach the gospel and people are open to it. And it's very successful. Early, you go back to 1970s, 80s, there's a bit of a revival, and that's where many of us perhaps got saved in this country. And the gospel went forth and people were preaching, but it goes in cycles, doesn't it? You see what happens? Well, then opposition comes up. And things change, and now you see an awful lot being done to defend the gospel, don't we? And even in our own country, perhaps you've heard Canada from Canada as well. The importance of being able to defend the gospel. And so you might wonder, Paul's issue, of course, what was Paul being arrested for? If you remember, it was for being in the temple, right? And some thought he had brought some Gentiles into the temple, which is, of course, wrong, isn't it? And if you were a Gentile and you entered into the temple, of course, into the wrong place, the sentence was death, wasn't it? And you see, some, of course, had said. But you notice that all of Paul's defense, as you folks have already gone through it in preparation for this voyage, you've already gone through it and you perhaps have seen the details of it and how that really the issue of the temple really is not a big issue, is it? That everything they bring up against Paul is all about the fact that, he thinks differently, he preaches differently. And that he's in this resurrection. Paul, of course, goes through details of how he's converted several times, at least twice, right? He goes through his conversion and all the details about his conversion and what God had done and how he's seen the light and so on. And he goes all and how he who he was and what tribe he'd come from, whatever. He goes through all these details because now he's not the issue is not the issue of going in the temple a Gentile, but God has him defending the gospel. And so there's very little said about the issue of the temple. He's using the whole platform, God's using the whole platform to show the reality of course, who Paul is, his behavior, his conduct, and everything, because that is important to the gospel, isn't it? Some of you know if I go out and I'm trying to preach the gospel and I don't have very good behavior that people know about, then what do they think of me? Well, they look at me and say, well, wait a minute. You're a Christian and you do that? Have you ever had that happen? You know, that's what happens. See? But Paul was going through and showing that, hey, it didn't matter. That, you know, look at my character. Look where I came from. Look what God has done. And so he's defending the gospel. And so he gets off to Jerusalem, chapter 21, as you know. And then, of course, he goes from Jerusalem to Caesarea. He's with Felix and Festus and so on. And finally, in Acts 26, he's sent off, as you know, to go to Caesar. And that's where we see, where we pick up in chapter 27. But in those chapters, from chapter 19 to chapter 26, becomes a very important lesson to us, and you've already gone over it, in preparation for the storm. And what's going to happen. You know, of course, there's some nice parallels in that section, 19 through 26. This is the last section of the book. 19 through 20 is the last section of the book, very long. But 19 through 26 is all about Paul before he goes off to Rome. And so you know what happens in chapter 19. There's a riot, isn't there? And then, of course, in chapter 21, there's another riot, as you know. And then in 25, there's an ambush that's set. And in chapter 27, there's another ambush that is set. And that, well, those are all important parallels. You could take those whole sections and those starting points and see some beautiful parallels, what's happening. That there's a reaction to what's happening, what Paul's preaching or whatever it might be at the time. Not always Paul's preaching, but it might be happening. There's a reaction. Then, of course, that poses a risk to Paul in this case, usually. And those risks, of course, with the riots and so on, the cities are in uproar. In fact, in both cases, the riots, it said right after the city was in uproar, right? But they're two different cities, aren't they? As we know. And so we see it was Ephesus and then Jerusalem. Two different cities were in uproar over what was going on. One was led by Demetrius and his issues of the silversmiths and so on, as we know. And then, of course, the other was by the Jews in the response to seeing Paul in the temple. And then with the ambush setups in those other two sections, well, we see again there's some risk there about Paul's life. And they wanted to kill him, of course. And yet we see there's relief, isn't there? That in each case there's some relief. And so we have the town clerk quieting the crowd in the first case. And we have the Roman commander, of course, retrieving Paul from the midst as well in the second case. And again, the Roman commander sending him off to Caesarea to avoid the ambush, as we know. And then Paul appeals to Caesar. These are all ways of relieving, as it were, the situation. And there's much more you could follow. But there are beautiful parallels there. Now, how does that help us with chapter 27? Well, we need to look at chapter 27 then and see what happens. Because you see, in those other things, those other four portions of this section, we might call them subsections, there's five subsections, and in this fifth one, which is the one with the storm, well, the other four, of course, all dealt with major issues like riots and ambushes, right? So you have a riot, an ambush, but number five is sort of different. It's a storm. But you see the similarities, of course. And so now in chapter 27, we see we have them leaving to go to Rome, and Paul's going to preach there. He knows it. That's very important to say. And so the issue of faith does come in, doesn't it? Which we shall see. But isn't it interesting, as you read about the storm, and you can see this come out, as you see in verse 13, And the south wind blowing gently, supposing they had gained their object, having weighed anchor, they sailed close in the shore along Crete. But not long after, there came in a hurricane called Euroclydon, and the ship being caught and driven, and not able to bring her lead to the wind, letting her go, was driven before it. There it is, right? The storm comes. And so this translation says a hurricane, you might say, is coming, some kind of storm or windstorm or monsoon or whatever. But you see, a major storm comes. And you're not going to be going very far. If you had a map, they're in Crete. And they're going to leave Fairhaven and just go a little ways, just a little ways over. And they want to go to Phoenicia, I think, or Phoenix, as some people call it, in some translations. They want to go over there. It's not very far away. But they end up going a long ways away, as you know, from the storm. Because the storm actually takes them a little bit southward, and various people say various things about, whereabouts in the ocean. But basically, they end up in Malta, don't they? Way, way away from where they intend to go. Way westward. And so, it's sort of interesting. Why does God put all that in there? To show this storm. Now we know, of course, he wants them to speak at Rome. He might say, well, God wants them at Rome. But then why does Luke put all this detail about the storm and where they go and what they did with the boat and all this kind of thing? And couldn't they have just said, well, there was a storm, it didn't go so well. And they end up in Malta, right? And they were, okay, well, it broke up and they ended up in Malta, they got saved. But he gives all these details. But they're not there just frivolously, are they? There's a purpose in them all, of course. And notice that God doesn't perform, in a sense, any miracles here. I think that's one of the reasons he gives all the details. You see, couldn't God have just said, well, Paul, you know what, it's going to be a tough go, but you know what, I'll perform a miracle and you'll be in Malta in no time. Or wherever it might be, you have to go. But the reality was, you can see God's hand, can't you? But you don't see any direct miracles, it seems, in this whole piece. You may say it looks like a miracle. Well, perhaps it does. But you notice it doesn't really say, well, God did this. No. He just allows it to run its course, doesn't he? That God allows the storms, the nature, and whatever to happen, well, it happens, doesn't it? He doesn't stop it from happening. Do you think that happens in our lives as well? That storms come, and God doesn't necessarily put them away, does he? Now, we may pray so, right? We might say, well, a hurricane is coming towards Myrtle Beach, right? And there was a storm last year, wasn't there? One floods and whatever, and winds and whatever. And a storm's coming, and how many of you prayed that God might spare you? And he didn't. Oh, dear. Does that mean he's not faithful? Well, of course not. Why does he allow the storms to come anyway? Well, we're going to learn some of those lessons here in this section, aren't we? In this chapter, we could learn an awful lot about how God operates and the purposes in relation to that and so on. I'm not going to have the time today to go into all the details, but we're going to touch on a few things. But there's no miracles, evidently, specifically, you might say, literally said about there. No angels coming down to say, hey, let's stop the wind. God could do that, couldn't he? But there was none. And you know, it's just sort of strange. Wouldn't you think, gee, God has just said, Paul, you're going to Rome. And it looks like what's going to happen? Doesn't look too good, does it? It looks like he's going to die, perhaps, in the storm. And then what about God's saying that you're going to go to Rome and preach the gospel? The gospel is going to go to Rome, and yet it seems like things are not looking so good. And God doesn't make it so obvious that they're going to get there. Of course, Paul, by faith, will get there, as you know from the story. But you notice that God has not changed nature, has he? He keeps on going. Even though he's got his own missionary, perhaps several, Luke and others perhaps with him, are on the boat. And God doesn't change the storm, does he? You know, God can see that the helmsman and the owner decided to take the wrong way. God knows what's going to happen. But he doesn't change the storm, does he? The storm's already on its way, perhaps, but they don't see it. God knows it's coming. And God does not change it, does he? Wow. What will we do? What will Paul do? And what will these other people do on the ship? But it's a very important lesson for us that God does not necessarily change nature and the things around us to facilitate the gospel. He may. The miracles are an exception. They are in there sometimes. Could he do a miracle? Absolutely. We see it all through the scriptures at times. But many times, probably a majority of the time, he doesn't do a miracle. He just allows things to take its course. And boy, that's tough for us sometimes, isn't it? To allow things to take its course. And so we learn an awful lot as you look at the storm and what's happening here. You see that in verse 18, the storm was extremely violent. And the next day they threw the cargo overboard. Well, Paul had warned them, didn't they? They're going to lose a lot. And they did. And on the third day, with their own hands, they cast away the ship's furniture. Neither the sun nor the stars appeared for many days, and no small storm lying on us, and in the end of all hope of our being saved. Wow. Boy, it's not looking too good, is it? Not looking good at all. And so you see, there's no guarantees, are there, that we're not going to run into problems in preaching the gospel, in ministering. They're doing what God has called us to do. We may run into things like this. There are no guarantees. Well, I guess we do have a guarantee in the Bible, don't we? That came out this morning in our breaking of bread, didn't it? We do have a guarantee that... perhaps you know what it is. What do you think it is? That, well, nothing should harm us except... nothing shall separate us from the love of God. Yes, so there's no guarantee, but that's a guarantee, isn't it? Except that nothing shall separate us from the love of God, Romans 8 says. Oh, that's good to keep in mind in this chapter, isn't it? I wonder if Paul's thinking about that. As he goes through all this, now God, of course, is with him, and he does a few interjections here by Paul, we'll see in a moment. But we have to understand, first of all, that God records all these details about the storm and the issues that are involved there, so that we may learn how God operates. That even though it's with the gospel and it's an important issue and it's God's missionaries and so on that are doing it, it doesn't always change the reality of what happens, what God has put in place. The nature in this case, or the storms or whatever, are going to still occur. That's the reality of life. Sometimes he'll interject miracles or intervene with a miracle. It's marvelous to see. Other times he allows it to take its course. And sometimes missionaries die, don't they? And we may not fully understand why, but it's his way, isn't it? And by faith we understand that there's much glory brought to his name even when a missionary dies. And it looks like here that was going to happen, perhaps, if we didn't know the whole story, if we just were sort of living it out. Can you imagine being on that boat? What would your reaction be? What would my reaction be on the boat? Well, on this difficult trip, then, there are four interventions by Paul. Four interventions that Paul makes, and I have about 10 minutes to tell you what those four interventions are. And so, four interventions are happening, and Paul does, number one, you see the first time we already mentioned it, in verse 10, Paul counseled them, saying, "Men, I perceive that the navigation will be with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." And so we see then, God did provide a warning, didn't he? Paul somehow knew that perhaps God had showed him. Maybe he looked at the weather report. I don't know. I'm not. But he probably, the Lord showed him some way that, hey, this is what's going to happen. Things aren't looking too good. In fact, Paul just knew, right, that based on the time of year, and many would suggest this was around the time of the feast, which is, in this case, probably the Day of Atonement. They're thinking about around September, October time frame, so many suggest. So this is the fall, right? And so it's, in that case, getting close to winter. And so Paul's looking at the time frame right now, looking at the day they're at. The feast has been completed. And he's thinking, you know what? It's not probably a good idea for us to sail based just on experience. Paul had been on a few boats. And yet we have the expert helmsman here and the owner of the ship. They say, no, we want to go for it. There's a better place just down the road or just down the ocean. And so they want to go a little further and have a place that's a little more commodious. Perhaps they had more things available for boats or whatever. We aren't told, but it seems like this was not as good a place. It was ill adapted to winter in. But at least they were important, weren't they? They could at least stay there if they had to. And Paul suggests that he intervenes with a warning. And so you see something about Paul and about us as well here then. That in the storms of life, we have to be careful not to take undue risk, don't we? That Paul was willing to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to Rome, I know that, but you know what? We better stay here for the winter. No problem. Paul didn't see it seem necessary to put his life at risk on the sea for the sake of getting to Rome, because God would get him to Rome. Why do something like that unnecessarily, it seems, in his mind? And so he was careful about undue risk, it seems. You know, is it justified to do what they were going to do? And he's saying it's not really justified. How much time would they gain? They're going to have to winter somewhere. What do they gain by going down the coast a little bit? Not much. Maybe they get a little better harbor, maybe. But then there's a lot of trade-off there, isn't there? We get a little bit better harbor, but the chances of getting in a storm are much greater. And so Paul is just weighing, just naturally as a man, the risk. What should we do? And he tells them, he warns them. So the first intervention seems to be a warning. And so we have to be careful about undue risk. The question will arise as we look at what God does in our lives and what decisions we make. Is it faith or is it presumption? Hard to tell sometimes, isn't it? Is it faith or is it presumption as we go forward in the storm and do things and look at the storms of life and so on? And the decisions we make, oh, should we do this or should we do that? Well, let us hope it's in faith that we do make such decisions. And so it wasn't necessary to go to that next harbor. Faith really knew the limits in this case. And he knew that he'd get to Rome anyway, because the benefit of having that harbor is not going to gain an awful lot of time. He'd get to Rome in God's time. But the others would not understand that. They didn't want to relax there and stay at that harbor. They shoot for a different harbor along the same coastline in Crete there. And then we have, of course, a second intervention, don't we? Paul's second intervention, of course, comes. And we'll go to verse 21. After the storm had really done a job on them, and they lost all hope of being saved, right? And that was verse 20. Verse 21, and when they had been a long while without taking food, Paul said, standing up in the midst of them, men, you ought to have hearkened to me and not have made sail from Crete and have gained this disaster and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good courage, for there shall be no loss at all of life of any of you, only of the ship. For an angel of God, whose I am, in whom I serve, stood by me this night, saying, fear not, Paul, you still must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted all those that sail with thee. Wherefore, be of good courage, men, for I believe God. I love it. Wow, in the storms of life, there's Paul. And he's, of course, now the second issue is not a warning this time, although he does bring in the idea, by the way, why didn't you do what I told you to do? But, you know, he did remind them that he suggested something different. But it's going to be a great lesson to them as well. And of course, perhaps try Paul's faith as well, but Paul will remain faithful to God. And so now, number two, not just a warning, but he intervenes with the issue of courage. He comes with the issue of courage now. Be not afraid. There is a God that I believe in, and he has said, and it will happen, right? Do we believe that, brethren? That God has said such and such to us, that we should never be separate from the love of God. Do we believe it? Then we can go on, can't we? We can have courage. When all else seems to be against us, we can have courage. And so when all hope is gone to these people, right? Everybody here, except for Paul, maybe Luke, whoever. You see, all hope's going to be gone. And Paul says to take courage. Can you imagine? They may have thought he was nuts initially to say that. Right? Take courage. Even though all hope seems to be lost. But that's what faith does, doesn't it? If you know what God has said, and though men make a decision that is ill-advised, in this case, it wasn't Paul's fault to get shipwrecked, was it, really? That the men there made an ill-advised decision, God records it. And God allows it. And God says, well, I'm not stopping the storm, it's coming anyway. And it comes. But what a great use he makes of it, doesn't he? He takes our decisions and our foolishness sometimes and brings his own glory to it, doesn't he? It's very interesting how he works. And so you see, he has them to consider the fact that there's courage. He believes in a God who is in charge here. He knows what's going on. And he's the one who made these storms anyway. Isn't it amazing how God has allowed us to learn from the power of what he's created? Think about the winds. Those winds could kill them, couldn't it? Destroy the ship and kill them. But the winds can also have great good, can't they? Think about what they were doing there. They were sailing a boat. And they were harnessing what to be able to sail the boat? Well, the wind. Isn't that interesting? That God allowed these men to experience what it was like to understand the wind and the power of it, and it to make sails that would allow it to harness the wind so that they could move about the world on the water and bring food and whatever to people who perhaps would starve, perhaps. Who knows? We don't know. But that's, can you imagine today if we didn't have boats and didn't understand how wind worked and so on? We wouldn't have the power we have, right? The wind power and so on. And we wouldn't have the sailing we have today where we can bring food all over the world and so on. Or air flight, aeronautics and so on. That we learn about how gravity works and aeronautics and so on. And amazing stuff, isn't it? That we've been able to take what God has put in place in creation and learn how it works. And harness it for good. Now, I'm not saying there's not sometimes used for evil. It can be. But you see, God allows man to harness it for good. And yet it can still destroy if you're not careful with it, can't it? How about electricity? Have ever any of you worked with that? Very powerful, isn't it? Electrical currents and so on, the marvels of it all. And we have, of course, lights, and we have heat, or air conditioning, here. And so you see, we have these marvels, but misuse it, and what will it do to you? Well, gone, right? It could take your life. But God is showing us some great things, isn't he? So this storm here is going to teach us some lessons about how God works, but how he also allows us to learn about who he is. And we need to take warnings carefully, but be of good courage, because, well, Paul's going to go to Rome. He knows it. Faith says it's going to happen. Remember when Abraham, of course, was going to slay Isaac, right? And we know what happened there. And he didn't understand how it was going to work. He didn't understand the details. All he knows is that Isaac was going to have kids. He knew it. And faith says what? Well, God says do it, I'm going to do it. And he believed, of course, as we know from Hebrews, that he would raise him from the dead. How he'd do it, he didn't know. But God was going to do it. Because Isaac was going to have children. That's where my seed was going to come from. God said it. I believe it. Hard sometimes, though, isn't it? Tough situations. Number three, then, we see his third comment, third intervention by Paul, is in around verse 31. But we'll start with verse 30. But the sailors wishing to flee out of the ship and having let down the boat into the sea under pretext of being about to carry out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. Oh. Well, they were all concerned about being saved, weren't they, before? Now Paul's saying, you got to be in the boat to be saved. Amazing stuff. And the sailors, of course, were going to try and get out on one of the lifeboats, we might say, right? And the centurion, of course, cuts it away, and the boat goes sailing off. The centurion this time believed Paul, didn't he? After the first mess up, they said, well, it seems like Paul's got a better idea what's going on here. And so here we have the issue of Paul's faith. Because, you know, those boats could have been used to try and get the men out from the way from the ship that was going to break up, but he didn't. But God uses faith. And what's going to happen? Well, this whole piece now is going to lead to them coming to land. And, you know, had the sailors left, well, who was going to sail the boat? Who knew how to run to the ground and things like that? Well, you know, that takes some experience, doesn't it? Some work. And God knew that. So you see, there was sort of a miracle, wasn't there? But you see, it wasn't a miracle. It was that he used the men and their skill set, their experience, to make sure that the whole crew and the people were saved, all 276. 275 plus Paul. And so the soldiers cut away the ropes of the boat and let her fall, and so that boat went away. And then we see another intervention by Paul, the fourth one. And it sort of goes along with the third one, in verse 33. And while it was drawing unto daylight, Paul exhorted them all to partake of the food, saying, "Ye have passed the 14th day watching expectation without taking food. Wherefore I exhort you to partake of food, for this has to do with your safety, for not a hair from the head of any one of you shall perish." And having said these things, and taken a loaf, he gave thanks to God before all, and having broken, he began to eat. Wow, and so my fourth thought here is Paul was an example, wasn't he? He provided a warning. He provided courage. He is an example of faith, and now he's an example overall to the men. His issue of faith was third. I have here an example, his example as a believer. He gave thanks and ate, and then what happened, of course? They saw what he did, and what did they do? They did the same thing, didn't they? That they went ahead and ate as well. And so you see that in verse 36, and all taking courage to themselves also took food. And we were in the ship, all the souls, 276. There it is. So they took courage themselves based on the example of Paul and what he did. They figured, yep, Paul's saying, you know what, we're all going to be okay. Let's just believe it. Now, whether they believed in Jehovah, God Jehovah, we don't know. It's not clear. But I tell you, they're learning some lessons about how God works, aren't they? Using His creation to teach lessons. And men hopefully will learn from them. And so here, as we then just sort of wrap it up and say, here's a story then of Paul on his way to Rome. And you might say, gee, it seems to interrupt the whole story about, you know, why doesn't he just go right from there to Rome, just say one sentence, and Paul got to Rome. And then start talking more about what happened in his preaching there, his defense of the gospel there. And that would certainly flow very nicely, wouldn't it? If he had left out the whole story of the ship and the wreck, you know, you could have very nicely just said, okay, and so Paul went on a ship to Rome, right? And then go right into what he have in chapter 28 in Rome, after Malta, go into the issues what he did at Rome. And it would have flowed very nicely. Instead, we get this 44 verses of all about his trip. Because we really need to learn some lessons, don't we? About how God operates. And that Paul would learn as well. In relation to the fact that he would get to Rome. But it would require a great deal of faith. And that sometimes men's decisions mess us up, don't they? The consequences of other men's decisions sometimes affect us. And yet God can use those. We still have to have confidence in Him, don't we? So why don't we then, at least as we close, suggest that we need to be careful about unjustified risk and being careful that we are not presuming on God, that we are by faith doing what He has us to do. And that we take courage as we look at the storms of life that will affect us, the difficulties going on, as you well know today. And that we live by faith. And then fourthly, that we might be an example to others of that faith. And God will help us. And so I leave that with you to think on. And I didn't go all the technical details about what the sailors did and so on. There were marvelous lessons there. Perhaps some other brothers will go into the details. But hopefully that will be a help to you as you think on these things. Our Father, we thank You for this morning, for the opportunity to be in Thy Word. And this great picture of this shipping expedition, as we might say, where Paul was going to Rome, and Lord, all these details of what happened on that trip. Wow. We just stand amazed. But we thank You for the great lessons we receive from it. The interventions Paul made that we might learn about the fact that we need to be careful in this world, that we might take courage, that we might have faith, and that we might be an example of such to those we encounter. And so we ask that You might help us to apply those lessons to our own lives, that we might not just dismiss the whole story as just a nice story and we see Paul flying against the Roman and forget all about it, but that we actually consider carefully what You are showing us about your creation and what it teaches us and how we need to be faithful to Thee regardless of what happens. We give You thanks now and ask Thy blessing in the name of our Lord Jesus. Amen.